We are not waiting around.
No, we are not.
Batting leadoff in the top of the first inning. Padre manager Andy Green sits down with us and kicks off our program. Mr. Green, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for lunch, first of all. That was very nice of you to invite us by the manager's luncheon this afternoon. I know that you picked up the tab. It was very kind of you. The chicken was delicious. Thank you.
Picked up the tab and passed it right on to MLB. That's what I do with just about everything.
Very smart of you. Very
in
smart.
One sense, my fine money probably paid for it. So
yeah,
I
there
guess
you
I
go.
Paid for it.
There you go. That's where I was going to wonder what they do with that fine money. So that might be what it is.
Andy, let's get right into it. I think Will Myers has been a topic of conversation really all offseason. Have you had any conversations with him in regards to where he will be playing next year? Last year, we ended the season. He was at third base. I know you got a glut in the outfielders. Where does that fit?
Yeah, with Will, I think right before I came here to Vegas for the winter meetings, reached out for him with a text, said let's catch up on the other side of the winter meetings, hope to have a greater measure of clarity as to how our roster is going to be constructed. I know in Will's case, for me, we went into last season, and before he had ever thought about playing third base, he came to me and was like, I'll play third base, and wanted to do that, wanted that type of challenge. And when we signed Eric Hosmer, he was ready to move off of first base to go the outfield. He's been great in that regard, and I think a lot gets made publicly of Will's willingness to do different things. He's been willing. He's been a great advocate for whoever comes in to make us a better ball club, and I think we've been very grateful from that as a coaching staff and as an organization. I think as we get into this coming season, we'll have greater clarity here shortly on the roster, and then it becomes easier to have those types of conversations. But you're versatile guys. Like, sometimes it takes a while to be able to clearly identify what the role is going to look like. And I think at third base, yeah, there's work still to do, but there was also a lot of encouraging things there last year that we were excited about as an organization. And what it did for us was even beyond that. We got to watch Franmil Reyes and Hunter Renfroe play every single day and keep those three bats in the lineup. And we had a very good September doing that. I think if you step back and look at our record, we played in 16 and 13 or 16 and 12 over the last 28 games, and that was with that type of alignment defensively, and it gets good bats on the field, and we've had the biggest trouble getting on base, right. And we got to find a way to get our bats on the field, and Will at third base gave us that opportunity to do that.
Andy, when you look into this offseason, what kinds of things did you put at the top of your list as a manager in terms of not just ability and not just talent and not just guys playing certain positions, but just things that you think this organization still needs to do to improve going forward?
I think as a manager, you're always looking at your coaching staff and at your players. You're not so concerned with the 30,000-foot view of what are we going to do from an acquisition perspective. You're looking at how do we get better on the field. And I think what's been most encouraging to me is every conversation I've had this offseason, whether it's with Austin Hedges or Hunter Renfroe or Eric Hosmer, these guys want something great here in San Diego, and they really want to be challenged right now. And, you know, they're getting their feet under them in the big leagues. Haas obviously has always had that, but you're seeing confidence grow in a young core group of guys that they can do things here. I think that's exciting for us. I think we're going to continue to challenge our guys every single day more than we did in the past. I think we have the coaching staff to do that, and I think that's going to get us better quicker.
Andy, you mentioned something to me at lunch that I thought was very interesting. We talk so much about players during the offseason, you know, working on their craft, getting better as players. What kind of stuff does a manager do to maybe strengthen the leadership part of his skills?
Yeah, I you know, for me, there's always self-reflection at the end of a baseball season where you look yourself in the mirror and say, where did I come up short? What can I do better? And I want to do that whether we win 60 games or 105 games. You always want to be that kind of guy that looks in the mirror and models to your team what it looks like to always be on the quest for improvement, because that's the only way your organization's going to get better is if you model it from this seat. So, you know, I took some opportunities to go study some organizations firsthand, go be with some, you know, one team in particular and learn a lot from them culturally. I've been to leadership conferences with other great leaders in sports and trying to find whatever I can. We've had a ton of conversations internally as a staff, front office, always searching for that greater measure of alignment that, you know, makes things function better for the players.
Can you share the team that you went and visited?
Yeah, I spent 5 days in London with the New Zealand All Blacks. I know nothing about rugby going over there.
They're legit, though. I know that.
Yeah, they're in the history of the world, they're the winningest team in any sport, the highest winning percentage in any sport. They've won the last two World Cups in rugby. They've been number one in the world since since 2010. In our world of baseball and football and basketball, it doesn't really register, but when you're in London, England, and there's 82,000 drunk Englishmen going crazy at that game, it was a great sporting event, and got to spend time with their coaching staff and develop some strong relationships there and learn some things, man. Like, sure. Don't have this thing figured out. Don't pretend to. And took a lot of those things immediately back to guys on the team. I've talked to Austin Hedges a ton about it because we get to get face-to-face in San Diego a lot and spend some time together. And I think some of the things I learned, like, they're going to make me better, and that's all you're ever looking to do is get better.
I got to believe that as a manager of a Major League Baseball team, I'm not sure, but I know as a manager of a fantasy baseball team, I walk around about 5 hours every day thinking of my lineup. So, and we asked AJ Preller about this, and he said, yes, he looks at his chalkboard once an hour probably thinking about the lineup. For the Padres, for you, it's a situation that I think is very exciting in the sense that you can't, I'm assuming, can't totally picture exactly what your lineup's going to look like come April, let alone February, let alone this week. And that's good, and it's interesting. It makes it fun. There's so many different directions you guys can go.
You know, it's really fun to get a piece of paper out in the off season and dream a little bit about what your lineup's going to be on opening day, and also what you hope it is if you make a couple moves. And,
right.
That's fun. It's also not very profitable for me. There's a lot more real stuff to be focused on right now than some hypothetical 4 or 5 months down the road. And as we plan for spring training, as we build unity among the staff, as we talk to our players, that dominates the majority of my time. But I'm just like you, man. It is fun to sit down and like dream on some of these guys coming through the minor league system, to pencil out what the rotation looks like over the coming years, to see these guys start to emerge in the minor leagues, and then also to sprinkle in one or two free agent or trade targets. Those are that's fun conjecture.
Batting third, B. Harper, center field. Yeah, I get it.
Andy, you mentioned in the presser today that you're pretty excited about the things Fernando Tatis is doing in winter ball. Give us those out there a little bit of an update on what you've been hearing and seeing.
Yeah, I get the opportunity. We got some great people in the front office. Cut up Dominican Winter League video. It'd be very hard for me. I try to be a dad in the offseason.
Right.
It'd be really hard to watch like complete games of four different teams in winter ball. So they cut up the video, send us the highlights. And, you know, like top of the list for me, like pre-pitch engagement in the field, man. Like he is locked in on the baseball field. And that's a change from where I felt like he was last year.
Mentioned that last year. Right.
So that's like you give a guy a challenge and you watch him run with it. He's as electric on the base paths as just about anybody in the game not named Billy Hamilton. Like, it's crazy how much ground he eats up with his strides on the base paths, and how the first to third comes so easy, how he scores from second base, how he steals bases. He's going to take some chances. He's kind of that exciting player. There's every week there's one of those highlight reel plays that you go, wow, how'd he pull that off? And he's going to continue to grow through, like, just getting repetitions, making the routine plays look routine. But, man, he's got some ability. And him and Franchi Cordero is kind of the outfield athletic version of that, like, yeah. Highlight reel waiting to pop where he can hit a ball 575 feet out of nowhere. And so we followed those guys and Francisco Mejia, and I think we're overall, like, pleased with what our guys are doing in winter ball right now.
God, these names just sound so cool.
Don't they?
I mean, they really do. Where are you patience-wise? Like, Tony's always telling me, Chris, be patient. It's all coming together. It's all coming together. Obviously, you'd love to be in the World Series in 2019. I mean, that's what you are in the sport for. Where do you think this franchise is in terms of along the line to getting to where it really wants to go, and how are you personally handling the patience factor of waiting around, you know, waiting for these guys to really be ready to go?
Patience is never been a strong suit of mine.
Me neither.
I'm wired to be highly competitive, to go out and win whatever's out in front of you, and you want to push like that. And you know, I understand from a fan base perspective how hard the waiting is, because it wasn't just like you started waiting 3 years ago.
Right, right.
We tore the thing down and started rebuilding it. And in that sense, like, yeah, we're moving just as fast as the Cubs did, just as fast as the Astros did, actually faster. Like, those teams lost 100-plus games multiple times, 110, 111 games.
It was like 3 years in a row, I think.
They did, yeah. They were, like, in a level of struggle far beyond what we've gone through. And, you know, patience is painful sometimes, and you don't want to ask anybody that's waited, you know, since the last time the Padres had a playoff team to be patient any longer. So that doesn't ring, it rings hollow at some point in time. For me, I want to win. I want to win now. But I also understand what it means to bring organizational resources to bear in a window that lines up with your talent arriving at the major leagues. It makes sense. You know, the Garrett Richards signing is something I'm thrilled about. Doesn't do us any good in 2019. That's like getting a Christmas present and like leaving it on the tree and say, no, sweetie, next year you can unwrap that. We're just going to leave that right here.
I'm going to use that example with my wife this year and see if it works out.
Yeah, stick your Garrett Richards presents under the tree and then tell her you can open that box in 2019. Christmas. So, you know, I think we're thrilled about him and think he can pitch at the top of our rotation in 2020, but that's not 2019.
Right.
And, you know, it's a really smart move from an organization. It's a really, we've gotten applauded from a ton of great baseball people that see it and it makes sense. But to a fan, come on, man. You don't get to watch him pitch in 2019 and you know we struggled in the rotation in 2018. Yeah, so personally, it's hard. But I've got the responsibility to move it further, faster, and I feel that responsibility greatly. And when it doesn't move as fast as I'd like it to or fans would like it to, man, I feel that. I feel that very deeply, and I want it to move quickly, and I want guys to be really proud of the Padres in San Diego. There's nothing that drives me more than having fans like celebrate our team and having something to celebrate in the city, and we haven't done that yet. I feel that. I feel that responsibility very greatly.
One more question. We know you got to get out of here. You're a busy man today. The one position that really hasn't come up a lot is shortstop. Now, obviously, Fernando Tatis is a shortstop. He can play that position. Do we have any direction on that? Are we turning the reins over to him from opening day, or are we going to bring a guy in for 1 year?
Yeah, I think we're going to bring him into camp and let him compete. Also understanding he like played 2 months in Double-A and doesn't have a ton of time at the upper level of the minor leagues. The winter leagues are helping him right now, but he doesn't have a ton of time at the upper levels of the minor leagues. So there's probably still some development out there for him. We're not going to hasten his development, and we're not going to speed him to the big leagues just because we might have a hole there.
Gotcha.
We're still engaged in having conversations with Freddie Galvis and guys like that to see if they fit us. But that's a decision for, you know, for Freddie as well as for us. In free agency, it's like takes two to tango.
That's right.
In our shortstop's case, like, we know who's coming, and we know at some point in time in the year we have an expectation that he'll be here. And then that's probably going to be handed over to him regardless of who's playing shortstop. So we're going to have to sort through that in the coming weeks and months. But, you know, we have Greg Garcia in-house now. We shifted out kind of our two utility guys and Corey Spangenberg and Carlos Asuaje. They gave tons of effort to the Padres organization. Neither one of them did we ever see having the capacity to play shortstop. So we moved on from them for a greater measure of positional versatility in Greg Garcia, and also somebody who's traditionally gotten on base. So we do have like somebody who can play it at the major league level right now. But we haven't answered every one of our questions yet this offseason.
Last one for me then. Let's go behind the plate real quick. Francisco Mejia, what did he show you? What excited you about him? And I know that you were very pleased and the organization was pleased with how Austin Hedges finished up. So almost you can do no wrong at the catcher position, it would seem to me, but other than to be able to find enough playing time for both guys.
Yeah, Austin, for me, took the biggest strides of anybody on the team last year. Couldn't be more pleased. We've always seen him as elite defender, and he was that again last year. But the bat really came on in the second half, and the confidence really came up in the second half. And if you split up his numbers in the season, he is literally one of the top three or four offensive performing catchers in the game in the second half, along with elite defense. So he was doing a lot of things right late in the baseball season. It was great to get him back that way. And then Mejia is just a bundle of potential right now. It's an 80 arm behind the plate. You don't see an arm like that anywhere in the game. Austin Hedges has one of the best arms in the game. Mejia's arm is on another level, and he's got some bat-to-ball skills that people envy, but he still has, behind the plate, a lot of work to do in order to be right there alongside Austin Hedges. He's not afraid of that work. He's engaged in that work. But in Cleveland, they basically took him off of that position, which stunted his development curve. So now he's still got to rep out. So as we go into the season, he's going to have to compete to, one, make the club and compete for playing time against a guy who's really doing everything to establish himself. But I don't think he's scared of that. I haven't seen any fear in him. And I think from the first day he started for us, the 97-mile-an-hour Luis Castillo pitch that he deposited into the stands, next one he hit out the other way, you saw real quick why that potential is all there.
Ladies and gentlemen, Andy Green, manager of the San Diego Padres. Andy, we certainly appreciate your time. We know you got a busy day. Safe travels home, man.
Yeah, looking forward to getting home to those girls. You all have fun here in Vegas. Put it all on black.
Black, he says. All right.
Not red.
You, Andy.
So I can win.
Thank you, Andy.
Thanks, Andy. Appreciate the time. One of the really interesting stories going on here, Tony Gwynn Jr., is this of the potential Baltimore Orioles new manager. Yeah. And we thought we'd get to the heart of this. Sarah Perlman works for Mass, and they cover the Orioles and the Washington Nationals on the Beltway there in the East Coast. And Sarah, yesterday, we kind of overheard you. I have to tell you, we were sneaking a listen to your report.
I love it.
And we thought, my goodness, this is an interesting story. And tell us a little bit about what happened yesterday, because you got the Orioles had a new manager. They didn't have one. They did have one, and I assume they'll eventually have one. But
they're going to have one.
Right, yeah. They'll eventually need to have one, whether it's you or somebody else.
It might be me at this point.
Yeah. What happened, though? It was crazy.
So yesterday, as you know, we go and meet with the general managers at the end of the day, and we're headed up. So we meet at 5 p.m., and we're about to walk in, and Ken Rosenthal tweets. The Orioles are going to announce, they're going to announce him as the new manager, and we get in the room, and we're not – going to say anything right away. So we're just sitting down on the couch, and we asked Mike Elias, you know, is this report true? Are you going to hire Brandon Hyde as the next Orioles manager? And he says, no. And we said, okay, are you any closer to a manager? He says, I'm not going to go into that. No. Are the six candidates still in the running? Yeah. Okay. So we are bouncing around it, and then all of a sudden MLB Network pops up, and I see Ken Rosenthal sitting on the set on the bottom breaking Orioles gonna announce
Couldn't
Cubs
be
bench
any better
coach.
Timing on this right now.
Yeah, Brandon Hyde as the next manager. So I'm like,
did
right.
The GM see this go up on the screen
not
too?
Yet.
Okay.
Not yet.
So okay, like, not yet.
We're like totally looking around, and we're kind of laughing at this point. So All of a sudden John Mioli, who works at the Sun, is like, with all due respect, I know you don't want to say anything and you're keeping it really close to the organization, but we're seeing it on MLB Network right now. And he just starts laughing, and he's like, this is really premature. That's all he said. It's a premature report. No offers have been made. No deal is done. We have not hired a manager. So we kind of let it go. And lo and behold, MLB Network was reporting it. And I talked to him this morning. Actually, he was on the set. I asked him again, any closer on Brandon Hyde? And still, no, it's a premature report. And that's all we got.
So, Sarah, do you get a sense of where this is coming from? Obviously, Ken Rosenthal is one of the most respected reporters we have in our game, so everybody is going to believe the report once it comes out. Where are they coming from at this point?
It's so interesting. I don't know where it's coming from. I want to find the source as well, because I want to talk to them, right? Ken Rosenthal is pretty accurate.
Normally.
So, exactly. So my argument would be Brandon Hyde will be the next Orioles manager. Right. I'm sticking with it. I think at this point what they're doing is it got out a little early, and I don't think they're retracting anything. I don't think the deal was necessarily signed.
Right.
So until it's officially, you know, you dotted your I's, you crossed your T's, then you'll make the announcement. I mean, if I'm the Orioles, right, you're going to wait a little bit of time now. You got to reassess and make sure the deal's done before you announce it. But I'm going off what I hear. I'm going to say Brandon Hyde is the next Orioles manager.
You know, covering the Orioles had to be a great joy for you last year.
Please don't bring it up.
We covered the Padres. So, you know, I know we weren't in the same boat, because it was a long season for the Orioles. But this organization, a lot of people from the outside say, you know, they just don't have it all together right now. Is this kind of an example of how the Orioles are, or is this kind of not normally Baltimore the way they play things?
I think they actually, for some reason, have this image that's false.
Yeah.
I think the Angels are actually doing a really good job right now, and it started with the conference we had with Mike Elias. I think it is, I would say, under control. I think what's happening is that Mike Elias is new, so I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe you don't want to announce who the manager is until everything's complete, right?
Sure.
Then you have to start retracting things, and it gets all messy. A report got out that made them not look good. But I really just think they're trying to respect the other candidates. You don't want to go out and have this leaked when you haven't had the opportunity to call the other candidates and thank them and say you haven't received the job. So I think that also maybe had a part in it, right? Because then you have five other guys that are watching this on MLB Network. Like, I never got a call that I didn't get the job.
Yeah, so you don't like people to find things out
through
the media.
Exactly. So I don't think they're a mess. I know they have this image for some reason right now after the falling down year, but
Yeah, the Padres get the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, if you lose a lot of games, people think the organization's kind of messed up.
For sure.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that's the case at all.
Yeah, generally losing kind of brings all these names and different ways people describe you. I want to ask you a little bit about the Orioles' direction. I mean, Adam Jones, who's been pretty much a lifelong Oriole, Seems to be moving in a different direction. Those two seem to be parting ways. What direction? Obviously, it's a rebuild mode, I would assume, for Baltimore. Is that the direction that they have decided is the best way to go at this point?
Absolutely. You're talking about starting from the ground up. And that started with Mike Elias, who came from the Astros, a really analytics-heavy organization. They hired Sig Medel, which is not what the Orioles are known for whatsoever. So, yeah, I mean, they're starting from the ground up. I actually asked him today, would he be open to moving veterans? I mean, you're talking about people that are taking a lot of money on that the salary right now for the Orioles. Alex Cobb, even a really good pitcher, would they be open to trading people like him? And I think they are. I think this is a full tear down and rebuild, which is the way you have to do it. You guys know that, right? When you're that bad, you got to start somewhere. But Adam, it's safe to say, will not be.
Why are you asking us about when you're that? But what would we know about being bad?
we know a little bit about.
We do.
We have to be honest.
You guys might know more than me.
Oh, now look out! Well, I'm kidding. Hey, let's be honest. In the history of baseball, the Orioles have had a little more success than the Padres. It's a great organization. Sarah Perlman is from Amassin. They cover the Orioles. Also, the Nationals. Just before we let you go, a quick question on our old friend Steven Strasburg, who pitched at San Diego State. Both Tony and I went there.
Nice.
So we just like to check in and see how he's doing and how's his relationship with the Nationals right now and where's he at in his career.
I mean, he's great. You guys know that. It's hard to find a better arm. If he could just stay healthy, yeah, right? That's the argument. I think it's the point in his career where if you don't need to shut him down, they need to not shut him down.
Right.
Because he's in the latter part of his, not the latter, I guess the middle of his contract. He's an opt-out year, but I think it's going to be a really good starting rotation. He stays healthy. You're talking about Max, Steven Strasburg, and Patrick Corbin. He's showed up to that press conference, by the way, to show some, I think, respect to Patrick Corbin. So he's doing great. I mean, that's an arm that you need to be healthy, because when he's good, I mean, that guy's great.
And I guess the Bryce Harper thing's kind of the other elephant in the room. No one's asked you about it, I'm sure.
We heard from Mark Lerner not too long ago that, you know, as of right now, it'd be hard to kind of bring Bryce back if he decided that he wanted to return. They kind of already knew that, though, once they signed Patrick Corbin, I would assume, right?
I actually think it's completely two different situations.
Okay.
I think the money has nothing to do, that was signed for Patrick Corbin, has anything to do with Bryce Harper, and you'll hear them say that. We talked to Mike Rizzo. I talked to him yesterday, actually, and what he said was the door's still open, and you're going to hear that a lot. Scott Boris, Bryce Harper's superstar agent.
Yeah. He's here today. I just
saw him court for about 40
minutes.
Oh, I was there.
Did
my arms are tired.
Squeeze through there? My goodness.
So, I mean, he'll say the same. The door's open, right? And that's a player. That's a franchise generation type player. You're not going to let him go without giving another shot. I think there's a situation where they could wrap back around and check in with the Nationals. That door is not closed. It's not.
There she
is. Very interesting.
Sarah Perlman, great stuff.
Appreciate
about
your time.
The crazy situation with the Orioles and the Nationals. Thanks. Good luck.
I guess you get the best of both worlds, though, right? You get the kind of the bad side and then the really
good
side.
Oh, it'll change back around before long. The Orioles will be good and the Nationals won't be
and
good.
And the Padres will be good.
Thank you, Sarah. We're going to finish with that.
I'll drop the mic here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thanks, guys.
It's now time for the most electrifying segment in sports radio. Gwen and Chris go through the best of the rest in the Big Five.
I always feel so official here with you guys, you know, walking by with my microphone and Tony Gwynn Jr., everybody saying hi.
You feel official, huh?
Feel official. Give me the number five.
Number five.
I think it's safe to say we were all a little worried about the Aztecs football program this year. Just a little worried, not too worried, but maybe this will make you feel better. The Aztecs got 3-star running back Justin Dinka to commit to the program. Listen to who else offered him scholarships, and he chose San Diego State over all these schools. Arizona, Baylor, Houston, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas State, Missouri, Ole Miss, I have to keep scrolling, SMU, Texas Tech, Utah, and Utah State. So those guys all offered him scholarships. I want to start with you first, Tony. What does this tell you about the state of the Aztecs program?
I don't know that it tells me anything, honestly. They've been pulling 3-star recruits in for quite some time. That's kind of been SDSU's motto. I recognize the fact that...
throw those 3 stars out the window. Choosing the Aztecs over all those schools.
It doesn't tell me anything. Yeah,
Still.
I mean, there's been many kids who have chosen even better schools than the ones you've named and come to state. So it doesn't tell me anything.
Thank you. Chris?
Well, would it also, it doesn't tell me a whole lot other than the fact that the Aztecs have been a running back factory here for the last half decade or maybe a little bit longer. And I think kids would be smart to come to San Diego State if they especially think they're good running backs. Yeah. I mean, if you're good, it's a pretty good place to come and display your talents. I mean, you know, from Ronnie Hillman to DJ to Rashad Penny, and if it wasn't for an injury, who knows what Juwan Washington might have done this year. That's so right. I think the Aztecs do a good job of getting running backs because they feature running backs in their offense.
Does it concern you a little bit that Rocky's going to change his philosophy?
I don't think he's going to become a wide open, throw the ball 97
times. It's not going to be air raid, right?
No, I don't expect that, but I what I like is that he's going to take a look at the program and say, hey, where can we get better? That's
as
a smart
should,
thing to do.
Every head coach should.
Yeah.
Good stuff, guys.
So, no, I'm not worried.
Okay. Thank you. Thomas?
Number four.
Kevin Durant had some pretty interesting comments about the Warriors' recent run. He said, quote, I know for a fact that we'll get our jerseys retired. We'll probably all get statues here in front of the Chase Center, which is their new stadium being built in San Francisco. He goes on to say, we'll be buried legends forever, meaning that people will recognize this run.
No, he didn't say buried legends. He said we would be Bay Area legends is what he said.
I literally took that from a tweet. I copy and pasted from a tweet. So I trusted a tweet. So he'll be.
So he said Bay Area, legends. And you have him saying buried legends.
It's the same thing. It's the same thing. I mean, they can be buried legends.
That's a promo.
Thomas, can
thank you, Thomas.
I don't think I was going to say that, except for the fact that you probably have run out of room on the promo tape.
Buried legends.
I this came from a really good source too. That's why I trusted it.
Oh, I'm sure.
We'll be.
I will in the whoever's defense this is. When you're listening to Kevin Durant talk, he isn't like enunciating all his words. So I could see how maybe he got buried.
No, I think this was an autocorrect.
Okay, that might have been.
And I'm very familiar with that. Okay. Anyway, he said we'll be Bay Area legends forever, meaning that people will recognize this run and this team forever in the area. Chris, you're up first. Do you agree with KD?
That they'll be buried legends or Bay Area legends?
It could be either.
It was such an easy lob, you had to take it.
Well, I've never lived in the Bay Area, but I've certainly been there. The fans there, like yourself, Scraby, are wacko bananas, off the charts, cannot be brought back to reality type fans. That's just the way they are in San Francisco and in Oakland and the Bay Area. So I actually think that Kevin Durant is correct. If the Warriors win another title, a couple more, yes, people will sit around Golden Gate Bridge, you know, bar and grill until
free promo for that.
Yeah, until 21 BC or AD or whatever it is,
man,
and talk about the legendary days of the Warriors.
You're going deep into the bag right here.
I'm out of it. That's it. Closing the bag.
All right, Tony. But you did agree with KD.
I agree with Chris on this too. I think KD's point is that there hasn't been this many championships running through the Bay Area in quite some time.
You
so.
Think Draymond deserves a statue?
Now, I disagree with the statue part. Okay. Now, they all will get their jerseys retired. I truly believe that. And the fact that he said, he said he knew. So that means he talked to somebody that has brought it up at some point.
Ooh.
But the statue part, I think that's a little bit different. The statue is...
They might have a team statue.
They could have a team statue, right. But to have five individual statues, I don't see that happen. Maybe Steph Curry is probably the only one in line right now to get his own statue.
He's kind of almost a warrior for life at this point.
I think he is. He seems like the type of individual that he's content where he is and he likes where he is, and there'd probably be no reason to go.
Steve Kerr should get a statue too, right? If the players are getting statues, then the coach should get a statue. Does Phil Jackson have a statue somewhere?
Of Don Nelson up there somewhere?
Oh, Don Nelson doesn't need one. He didn't win like five titles or three titles or whatever the heck they won. All right, move on.
Yeah.
Number three.
Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson is 3-1 since taking over for an injured Joe Flacco, and head coach John Harbaugh has officially made Lamar Jackson the starting quarterback in Baltimore, and Joe Flacco is going to be the backup. Here is Joe Flacco talking about being the backup for the Ravens.
obviously disappointed that, you know, I can't be part of this team in the same capacity that I have been for a long time, but always got to be ready and stay sharp and be ready for the call at any point.
So pretty gracious in becoming the backup. Tony, is Joe Flacco done in Baltimore?
I think he is. I mean, the Ravens raced it. They didn't waste. They used their first round pick on Lamar Jackson this year. I can't think of very many times where there's been a first round pick used on the quarterback, and the quarterback that was there before him stays in that position very long. And we didn't even get through the entire season before Flacco had given up his starting role, and that's where it's at. So I think once you hand the keys over to Lamar Jackson, barring something crazy happen, he's going to remain the starter for the Baltimore Ravens, I believe.
Chris?
This is one of the very, very few times that I totally disagree with Tony. I think Lamar Jackson can't throw well enough to play week to week in the National Football League. I don't think he's a good enough passer yet. I understand why Harbaugh is keeping him as the starter. He's won 3 of 4, played very well, nearly beat Kansas City last week. But as the Ravens head down the stretch, there's 3 games to go. They are fighting with 4 or 5 other teams for that final playoff spot. It is a dogfight in that AFC. I just foresee a time somewhere in the next 3 games where Lamar Jackson will go into a throwing slump and there will be a pick or two, and John Harbaugh will be tempted to bring Joe Flacco into a game to save a game. So that, I think, will happen. Now, if you're asking me who's going to be the quarterback next year, probably Lamar Jackson. But I think Joe Flacco gets back in before this season's over.
Don't you think it better serves Lamar Jackson to sit a little bit and learn from Joe Flacco? Look at Aaron Rodgers. He sat behind Brett Favre for 3 years.
He was sitting behind Brett Favre. Joe Flacco
won a Super Bowl.
So? There's a lot of quarterbacks that's
He's
won a Super Bowl.
He's being paid bajillions of
that
dollars.
That don't mean anything either.
I thought you were going to do a reasonable Big Five.
You don't think that Lamar Jackson would be served better to sit and wait and watch and practice behind someone like Joe Flacco, who is a thrower, who does have deep playoff runs under his belt?
Is that the criteria? You just need to be a thrower and have a Super Bowl,
a veteran quarterback,
in order to teach somebody?
No, I think Lamar Jackson has been learning under Joe Flacco already. First of all, second of all, this is a little different situation. I think Lamar Jackson just still needs to become a better passer to play in the National Football League. I think it's as simple as that. You have to be an unbelievably good passer to play at that level, and I think that the Ravens, to make the playoffs, are going to need to go back to Flacco. That's my prediction.
All right.
Thomas. Number two. Today we wanted to announce that we're going to take the NFL draft in 2020 to Las Vegas. We're excited about that. We think it's going to be a great venue.
So you just heard that. They announced it today. The NFL draft has been on a traveling circuit the last few years, and they will be holding the draft here in 2020. Well, here being Las Vegas, that's where we are right now, right, for the winter meetings. So we were talking about this a little bit earlier, and Chris, I'm going to start with you. Why is Las Vegas all of a sudden a hotspot for professional sports functions like the draft and the winter meetings when people didn't want to touch this with a 500-foot pole?
Because they all are hypocritical. And for many, many years, they thought that if they didn't have any teams or any activities in Las Vegas, that they would be able to get away with trying to convince everybody that gambling and sports did not go hand in hand. But now, finally, they are being less hypocritical, and the NHL has come here, the NFL is going to come here, so now that they're going to bring teams here, it's the charade. Understand that you can come to Las Vegas. Not only that, gambling's so much more widespread now. It's not only just Las Vegas anymore. So, yeah, I don't think it's the same story as it was 15, 20 years ago.
Tony?
And the reason for that is because sports betting became legal in the United States. And I think ultimately that's why teams have changed their stance on why Vegas was a do-not-enter area. And I think that's really what it boils down to. They've always been involved in somewhat of the gambling thing, even though they never spoke about it in the media. But now that it's become legalized, I think there's really nothing holding them back from exploiting Las Vegas the way everybody else does.
I mean, this is kind of a perfect location.
It is.
The NBA was the first to do it. Remember, they had the All-Star game here about 10 years ago, and it was a huge success. And everybody looked at that and said, why aren't we taking advantage of this? This is a pot of gold over here.
Yeah.
And so everybody is taking advantage of it now.
All right, number one for our last in Vegas.
Number one.
I don't know why I did that.
The Eagles and Carson Wentz are having a tough year trying to repeat as Super Bowl champs, and it may have become much more difficult. On Monday, Carson Wentz will be a year out from the torn ACL he suffered against the Rams last year. But here is Doug Peterson talking about Carson Wentz and whether he will play this Sunday.
A new one, Carson, has a little bit of back soreness, a little tightness, and so we're going to rest him today, continue to evaluate him, and just make sure he's good. Sometimes he just gets just a little sore, a little tight. Nothing game-related, he's dealt with it, and so we're just going to continue to evaluate.
Is there a chance he misses this game, Doug?
Again, we're going to focus on today, get through today, and see where he's at the end of the day.
I don't know many back injuries that happen outside of the game that have to hold you out of the game, but Carson Wentz...
They exist, Graby.
I know. My back has been killing me for like 2 weeks.
Exactly. Have you done anything
athletic?
I'm
not Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz, he's been not the Carson Wentz we saw last year. People are saying that it may have been because he rushed back or whatever. But what do you guys think, Tony? You're up first. Do you think that they should shut down Carson Wentz for the rest of the year?
I would say no, because they're technically not completely eliminated from playoffs. But if that happens, yes, shut him down. I thought he got – I mean, listen, he tore everything in his knee.
Yeah.
And came back in time to play for the regular season. He made a tremendous recovery, and hats off to him for putting in the work. But even for those who go through the regular course of time that it takes for that injury to heal, you're still not 100% from the time you come back. It still takes almost another year before you're back to your normal self. I think you can expect the Carson Wentz we saw in 2017 to return in the 2019 season. But if once they get eliminated, I think they should shut him down.
Chris?
I think Carson Wentz is one of the most overrated quarterbacks in NFL history.
Thank you.
I don't think that he's a bad quarterback. I think he's a very good quarterback. But I think people look at Carson Wentz as a two-time Super Bowl winner, five-time Pro Bowler, 10-time All-Pro. Carson Wentz had about 8 good weeks last year with the Philadelphia Eagles in his rookie season, then got hurt, and it was Nick Foles who was there when they won the Super Bowl. Carson Wentz came back this year, and the Eagles aren't even a 500 football team. So I don't really care what they do with Carson Wentz. I think Nick Foles gives them just as good a chance to win.
Imagine if Nick Foles comes in and he leads them to the playoffs again?
He is not happening. We saw Nick Foles beginning of the year. I'm pretty sure he was starting quarterback.
You're right.
He didn't look very good.
All right, thanks, guys.
That's all for the Big Five from Gwynn and Chris on 97.3 The Fan.
Welcome back to Gwynn and Chris. Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris Ello, here at Mandalay Bay Winter Meetings 2018. It's been a rather slow one, but our show is just starting to pick up speed. Joining us now, San Diego State alum, current Colorado Rockies manager, coming off a terrific 2018 season. Buddy Black joins us. Buddy, how are you, man?
I'm doing well. Good to see you, boys.
As always.
Couple Aztecs.
Isn't it the best?
Isn't it? Come on.
The red and black table right here in the middle of the baseball winter meetings. Hey, congratulations on getting back to the postseason. Everybody always says how tough it is to get there. You know how tough it is to get back there. And for your guys to pull it off down the stretch, another tough race. But Colorado came through. It was well done.
Well, it was a great year for us. And I say all the time that, at the end of the season, truly one team's happy. And that, this year it's the Red Sox. It's great to make the playoffs. But once the playoffs start, you want to keep going. But, I was proud of our team in a lot of ways. We fought down the stretch. We won 9 out of 10.
Yeah.
We still ended up tying the Dodgers. They had a very good second half. They got a great team, as you guys know. And I don't know whether you've talked to Doc or not, but he's all one of our great friends.
Yeah.
But I think it was a good season overall for baseball. Like, the playoffs were great. The Red Sox Dodger World Series was awesome. But I'm proud of the Rockies. We had a nice season.
You guys had a terrific season, first of all. But you guys were able to kind of turn it on in that last month. And the previous season, you guys were in a similar situation where it came up a little bit short. Was there anything that changed from that experience the year before for some of your guys that helped them propel them to get over the hump that last month?
Yeah, I think, experience is the best teacher. I think in 17, going through the playoff race and making the playoffs gave the guys a great deal of confidence. And when you go through it, You want to experience it again. So, you know, 2 years in a row now, Trevor Story, Arenado, Blackman, LeMahieu, you know, our core players and some young pitchers, obviously, went through it the year before. You know, it just lends itself to, you know, an expectation level for the group and a confidence of realizing that, you know, we belong, you know, in a conversation as a playoff team.
No question. I thought, honestly, you talked about the World Series and there was some great playoff baseball, but the game that sticks out to me was that 15-inning deal in Chicago. Yeah. I mean, that wild card game with everything on the line, one game, and just playing deep into the night at Wrigley Field. And Tony Walters, a San Diego kid, comes up with the
RBV
hit for you. Yeah. I mean, come on. It was couldn't have been a better story, at least from this angle, right? Yeah. It was like you and Tony Walters pulled through. But you had to be so proud of your pitching staff and the way that team really galvanized against a great Cubs team.
Yeah, that was a great game. That was a classic game.
I think it was.
That, you know, Will. I know Will always remembered. I know that, you know, in the baseball annals, there's a lot of great games. You know, I think, you know, even going back to the Padres-Rocky game, 163 and
sure,
2007, that was a great game. But, I mean, you know, John Lester, Cole Hamels, we went up against those guys, Kyle Hendricks. I mean, it was a classic game. 2-1. 13 innings,
but it was awesome,
and it was a great game. A lot of, you know, a lot of changes in that game from a managerial standpoint. A lot of pitching changes, double switches, pinch hitters,
and to prove the fact that baseball can still be great no matter how long the game takes, because it was a 3 or 4 hour game that you couldn't take your eyes off of.
It was a long game,
right?
And you're right, in a low scoring where one. You know, one pitch can make a difference. It's, you know, those are the special games.
Buddy Black joins us, manager of the Colorado Rockies here on Gwynn and Chris, Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris Ello. But I've been dying to ask you this because I've always felt like one of your best strengths as a manager is the way you manage a bullpen. We fast forward to this playoffs, and your team actually fell victim to this. I guess we have to call it an opener. What is your philosophy? Because I watched how you manage your bullpen for the couple years I played with you, and I've seen you do it over time. You do it so well, and yet this philosophy now is so much different than the way I've seen you approach it.
Yeah, it's a little different now, obviously, depending on the pitching staff construction for each team. I mean, as it relates to the Rockies, you know, we were fortunate to have a starting rotation that led the National League in innings pitched,
right,
which, you know, we're really proud of our guys, especially some young pitchers like Freeland and Marquez and Anderson and Gray. I mean, these guys, you know, went to the post and pitched innings, and we were able to, you know, use our bullpen in, you know, a more traditional fashion like we've seen happen over the last 10 years. And now, I mean, the advent of what's happening now with an opener, one guy pitching one inning, then going to a longer type relief pitcher, and then, you know, the matchup situations and specialty pitchers. It's, you know, it's a different game. And then once you get in the playoffs, that's a completely different animal in the playoffs, where you really see the finish line, and you have to win games, and you go to certain relievers because of day offs. They're rested and you can use them, but. Yeah, the managing a pitching staff and a bullpen in the playoffs is completely different than managing the 6 month long haul. But you know what Milwaukee did, especially with their group, is, you know, something we haven't seen before.
No,
you know how they utilized Hader, how they utilized Knebel and some of their younger arms. And but you know, I think you know whether we're trending towards that, we'll see. But there's no doubt the use of the opener like Tampa made. Part of their regular routine. I suspect you're going to see more of that.
Probably going to see more of it, and hopefully Tony and I are both rooting for it to be a fad and to go away. Once Milwaukee beat you guys and then went to that opener thing, we openly were hoping it wouldn't work, because we feel like had Milwaukee won the World Series with that last year, then almost every team might have really been
like
implored
wild,
to have to do it this year a little bit, you know?
Yeah, I mean, they took it to the extreme when – when Miley against the Dodgers just faced one hitter, and that was very unique. The A's used a reliever against the Yankees in the wild card game, and that didn't turn out for him. But You know, again, but if you have the type of starting pitchers where, you know, you want to get off to a good start, I mean, you're going to start Chris Sale. You're going to start David Price and Kershaw.
Good.
And we're going to start Freeland, and we're going to start Marquez. I mean, you know, Tampa proved that, you know, just the construction of their pitching staff, they had to go about a little different.
Buddy, there's been, you know, some reports coming out of Colorado that you guys may be considering moving Blackman out of center field. Is there any truth to that?
Yeah, we're gonna move him, Tony. I think you know, where Charlie is in his career, I think getting him to a corner is gonna benefit him.
He and I
have had that talk. So you know, it's more than likely that you know, if something changes as far as an injury or a player acquisition or something, you know, he can very well go back to center. But as it stands right now, we're gonna probably move him over to right field. And Carlos Gonzalez, who's been a great Rocky, you know, over the last years, is will probably move on and, you know, be with another club.
But this team keeps on going forward. How do you guys go about picking up the disappointment, shaking off, I guess, the disappointment of the Milwaukee series? Because I know that's the last thing that the Rockies ever expected, is to go into a hitting slump at that time. But 2 years in a row now, you've been there. That's the good news. But as you said, you want to get there now, a third year in a row, so that you can do some damage.
We're gonna work, you know, this off season. You know, even here in Las Vegas, we're trying to do some things.
Yeah.
You know, to, you know, especially on the offensive side. I mean, the pitching staff, I think, is going to remain pretty stable. We're not looking for a lot of help there, but you know, our lineup, you know, there's a couple holes that we think we need to fill. And we're going to go after that. And like I said, you know, we have some guys who, you know, who are a big part of our team the last couple of years will probably not be with us. So, you know, there's changes every year. Most teams obviously don't stand pat, even the teams that win. You know, there's turnover, just the, you know, the nature of our game. But, you know, we're going to try to get a bat or two to help our offense, because we didn't really swing the bats, you know, like Rocky clubs of the past.
Yet you guys still managed to go
still
farther.
Got there.
Buddy, you guys are hire a new hitting coach. Dave Magdon comes in, very good hitting coach. What are you expecting him to bring to the ball club this year?
Well, you know, first of all, our interviews with Dave went really well, and I was impressed by it. I've seen him from the other side, you know, for many years, and I think that, you know, he brings obviously a great deal of credibility, experience. You know, he's a solid pro. You know, what I think he's going to bring that I think will be good for our club is a every night approach, you know, to the opposing pitcher, the opposing starter, and when teams start making changes and bring relievers in, from what I've gathered, and the work that we've done on Dave, is that he's very good at at game planning for an offense. You know, he used the term offensive coordinator, which I you know, sort of smiled at, that, you know, when the game starts, I mean, we're going to have a plan against that pitcher, you know, whoever that guy is. And it's going to be talked about, obviously, early in the afternoon as guys come through the cage, and we have, you know, our discussions about the pitching staff. But I think he's very, very good at that.
Obviously, we've always asked you about your times in San Diego, and you've always been gracious enough to share your memories of San Diego, but you're a little further away from that now. What do you think of what the Padres are doing, though? I mean, keeping a little eye on this. Obviously, I don't want to say the Rockies and Dodgers are looking over their shoulders, but you guys got to know this Padre team is probably coming pretty soon.
Yeah, from what I've seen and from what I've read, you know, I have not seen – you know, a lot of the guys that are being talked about, Tatis, Gore. We saw a glimpse of the young second baseman. He looks to be a nice player.
Urias, yeah.
You know, the outfield that we've seen, you know, there's some talent. I mean, we saw Renfro break out a little bit this year, and Margot. The big right fielder's got Bauer.
Reyes,
he hit some home runs against us. You know, the arms that are coming, I haven't seen them. But I've read scouting reports. I've heard people talk about them, and I think they're real. So,
yeah.
You know, that bodes well for the pods, you know, which, you know, obviously I'd like to see to a certain extent, obviously.
As long as they stay behind you.
Yeah, as long as they beat the Dodgers and the Giants and the Diamondbacks, I'm in.
You're right. Perfect. Yeah.
But, you know, and this was, you know, obviously a couple of years ago, well thought out, you know, by AJ and his group. And, you know, it's been some tough times, but hopefully good times are ahead.
But one more question before we let you get out of here. We know you're busy. And this is probably a question you're going to be dealing with throughout the 2019 season. You have an unbelievable third baseman.
We got that third baseman.
He's coming up on free agency. Are you guys going to be in a position to bring him back?
I think so. We want to. Yeah. I know that our owner, and obviously this is a decision, well above my level. But my take and. And I'm privy to some conversations, obviously, but I really think that there's a desire by both sides to maybe hopefully get something done. I know there's a mutual respect between, the Rockies and Nolan and vice versa, and there's something special about a player who spends his whole career with one team, as you know.
That's right.
And I think Nolan is has that type of feeling. So, again, we don't know how it's going to play out, but I know there's motivation on our part, and I believe Nolan also. But, you know, when it gets down to it, there's a lot of factors and variables along the way. But we'll see. But I know that as we speak, there's been dialogue even as far back as last year, setting some parameters and discussions as it should be. But, when it gets down to that point where it really gets down to the 11th hour. We're hoping that it gets done.
Well, we do too. I mean, unless he comes to the Padres, I want him to at least stay in the division because I like to watch him play. I love to watch him play, to be honest with you. He's fantastic. Yeah. Bud Black, great to see you. And thanks for being so gracious with your time as always. And good luck again this season to those Rockies.
All right. Thanks, boys. Good to see you as always.
Yes, sir.
Good luck with the show. And it's always great to talk San Diego sports, man.
All right, buddy. Thank you, brothers.
Hour number three from baseball's winter meetings, 2018, Las Vegas, Nevada. Chris Ello, Tony Gwynn Jr., Gwynn and Chris. Lance Lynn, right-hander, 3 years, $30 million deal. Texas Rangers, that's the latest news coming out of Las Vegas. Harold Reynolds from the MLB Network does an amazingly good job.
Unbelievable.
I am so impressed.
He's the model for all former baseball
he's the
players
guy that,
doing this.
That's a great point, Tony. That's a perfect introduction.
He laughed, but it's the truth.
Good introduction. Great to have Harold Reynolds with us for a few moments. Gwynn and Chris. Harold, thanks so much for joining us. I know you've been crazy busy the last few days, so we appreciate the time.
I feel like one of the five heartbeats. I get to take this thing off the hook here.
Well,
you
got
to watch
ahead.
That to understand that. Google that one.
I've seen five you heartbeats
seen
many
it.
A times.
All right.
So what's are you with everybody else that it's been too slow at the winter meetings this year? Or?
You know what? It's kind of been that way, but I knew it was coming.
Yeah.
And whenever you have two big high-end free agents like this, they're going to hold the market up. It's just going to happen. And I think if you looked at what's happened the last couple seasons, where they've kind of established that 31, 32, you're too old now in the big leagues.
Right.
You know?
That's when you become platoonish.
Yes. So now it becomes trade happy, and that's what we've been seeing. So I think more will break, but these guys are laying foundations. They get a chance to see each other, talk, fill guys out, see what they might want to do, and then we'll see things happen.
Explain to us, for those who may not understand at least, why that would hold up, because those two guys seem in a different tier than everybody else. It wouldn't seem on the surface that would affect the free agency, but explain how that kind of holds up the process.
Well, let's take Harper, for example. All right, let's say you're the Dodgers and you want Bryce Harper. Okay, well, then I got to figure out, what am I going to do with Matt Kemp? What am I going to do with maybe Jock Peterson? What am I going to do with Yasiel Puig? We've heard all their names involved. So now teams are like, oh, really? Jock Peterson's in play? What about Bellinger? So now you put four guys in play, and everybody's fighting to try to figure out what's going to happen. So it's not well, we're trying to find money for Harper. Let's see if we can go down to Wells Fargo. It's right. It's basically we got to clear some space because if he's coming, we got to, one, clear some salary, but two, he's got to have a spot to play. So that becomes problematic. So that's just one team. Then you go to the Phillies and you figure out, you see their moves they're making.
Right.
And, you know, you're trying to figure and read the tea leaves. Where are they going next? You know, so that's kind of, I think, how they hold the market up. And usually it's held up a little bit more, even with pitchers. That's what's strange. Now you throw trades in there, the Indians are holding up with two aces. When you got a chance to get Kluber or Bauer, and then Arizona's talking about Greinke. So now you got Lance Lynn, lucky he signed today.
Right.
You know, so that's kind of what starts happening.
When you look at the Padres from a national perspective, and the name Noah Syndergaard came up earlier a few weeks ago, and they were linked to Noah Syndergaard.
Mm-hmm. Even before offseason started.
Right. They were linked to him. My question was, are the Padres ready for a guy like Noah Syndergaard? What do you think, Harold?
Well, they spent $140 million last year on the first Hosmer, baseman, on Hosmer.
Yeah, that's true.
So you got to be heading that direction. I love where the Padres are at and what they're doing. They're young. They've got great young talent coming. And with prospects, you don't know how they're going to all unfold, but it looks good right now. I still think they're a ways away from going to get a Syndergaard, even signing Hosmer. You know, they were able to fall for that one, and then they got Hosmer, which I think was a little bit early.
Okay.
But if you're going to make those moves, you got to continue because the windows are tight. They're real tight. And the challenge now, what I'm seeing, just my personal view of what I see going on in baseball. You know, I looked at the American League West, for example. You know the Astros are going to go on a nice run, but they probably got about two more years left with that run. Because what are you going to do?
Start paying everybody.
Exactly. And that's the one thing when everybody's compiling all these young players, but eventually they become veterans. So today, we start hearing late last night and today that the Red Sox are talking about, we got to move Jackie Bradley. We got to go ahead and maybe move Bogarts. Bogarts.
Right.
You know, and all of a sudden names start going in there. Why? Because Mookie Betts is going to win his. If they're getting $300 million, Mookie's knocking on the door going, thank you very much.
Yeah.
I have no weaknesses. You know, and so he's going to look at that. And so the Red Sox got to clear that cap. So that's kind of all the jockeying we see. We didn't see it before because really we're operating underneath a cap. People are trying to say it's not a cap, but we really are. And that's what's happening in baseball
right
now.
Good points.
I got to ask you, you mentioned Kluber and Bauer. Kluber, he's been on this run for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
Bauer, on the other hand, really put his first full season together last year.
Yeah.
Why does it seem like everybody's putting him on the same level as Kluber? I know he had a terrific year last year, but Kluber's been doing it a lot longer. But they seem to be even as people are talking about these two pitchers.
Well, what the general manager's looking at is control. That's the word you always hear all the time. So Bauer's got 3 or 4 years left. If you trade for him, he can be, you know, on your club for 3 or 4 years of control. You're going to have arbitration years, but you can control him until he's a free agent. Kluber's got 2 years left. So, great, Kluber. Gotcha. I know you're a Cy Young guy, but that ain't worth my 2 years. I'd rather have the young guy at the 4 years. So
before
that's kind
of re-up with you.
Yeah, so that's why all of a sudden those young guys become more valuable, and you're sitting there going, shaking your head like, hold it, time out. I'm not getting it.
It's really been mind-blowing watching this season kind of progress. I mean, it used to be hinted that prospects were almost more valuable, but now it just seems like a full-fledged prospects are more valuable than some of the guys who've already proven themselves at the big league level. And that just comes down to control?
They're all in. I mean, they really are. That's why the futures game is so big now.
Right.
I'll go to that before I go to the All-Star game.
Makes a lot of sense.
And really, this is just me thinking. I'm seeing it from a different perspective. But a lot of these general managers, if I'm going ahead to an owner, I'm saying, hey, I got 3 years to figure this thing out. All right, then the second year, I'm saying, we almost there.
Right.
You know, give me three more, you know. Right. And so that's why the prospects become more valuable as well.
Harold Reynolds does it as well as anybody for MLB Network. Played second base mostly in the major leagues. Okay, Harold, are you going to be doing MLB Tonight one night? And it's going to be about the eighth inning of a Yankee game, and somebody's going to try to switch Didi Gregorius over to the other side of the field, and you're going to have to say, oh, they can't do that. The Yankees are out of shifts. They've used too many shifts in this game. They're going to have to keep Gregorius on the third base side. I mean, The rules committee is talking about all kinds of crazy stuff for the shifts. I don't know what's going to happen, but they can't ever get to that point, I hope.
You know what? I hope not, but I'm looking at it from two angles.
Right.
All right. One is a hitter. I mean, it's almost embarrassing that sit there and say, you guys can't hit the ball the other way, so we're going to make sure that we're going to make it easier for you to hit. It's like saying, you can't hit a curveball anymore, so let's just eliminate it.
All fastballs.
Yeah. So, but on the other side, I see where the commissioner's coming from.
Spectating standpoint.
The ball's not in play.
Yeah.
Yep.
Strikeouts, home runs, walks. And you turn the TV on, they're taking 50 seconds to throw a pitch because they're shaking to walk somebody or worried they might give up a home run.
Right.
So if I'm the commissioner and I'm watching the dollars sift away and I'm watching the NFL change their rules, so now all of a sudden, when was the wide receiver the diva on the team? Give me the ball. I saw a guy on Sunday screaming at a quarterback. They become more important now because you can't bump and run anymore.
Can't touch them.
So when were guys throwing for 5,000 yards in the season and all that? I mean, that was you're on your way to a Hall of Fame. Not today. You know, he had a nice season. Only 5,000 yards. You know? And so the NBA had the same thing with they added a three-point line, and next thing you know.
Scoring's became, up.
Yeah, so. Baseball, here's my take on the shift. I know I'm talking a lot here, but here's my take on the shift.
Talk as much as you need to, Harold.
Well, here's my take because we got no knock on Travis Shaw, no knock on Muncy, but I'm knocking them because they're not second basemen. And they're putting these guys playing out in right field, standing next to the right field. How you doing tonight, man? It's a little windy out here. You know? All right? But they're catching ground balls and throwing people out.
I know.
All right? And so when was the last time we went, wow, you see him go up the middle and make that play?
That's happened in a long time.
Never.
The excitement is gone from the game. So now you change the shift rule and you say second base is the divider. You got an infielder. You got to have two infielders on each side. And their heels have to be on the dirt. Play wherever you want. You can stack guys up, do whatever you want to do, but their feet have to be on the dirt, on the back edge of the dirt.
Wow.
Now you got to put an athlete back in there. Next thing you know, there's a ground ball that somebody got to, and you're like, wow, that's awesome. Next thing you know, there's a ground ball that gets through, and Benden Tenney stretches it to a double. You know, and next thing you know, you got some excitement back in the game. Yeah, and then people are going to start watching it again.
I can't
argue. Not that they're not watching right now.
I couldn't disagree more, but I can't agree more. I don't know if that's possible
but that's what I'm saying. I agree with you.
Harold Reynolds, MLB Network, joins us here, and Gwen and Chris. Harold, I got to ask you, and it kind of pertains to the same thing, kind of the question before we just asked you, with attendance dropping 4.5%, I think 17 or 30 teams all dropped off, is analytics kind of – because analytics is black and white, right? It's mm-hmm. this or that.
Right.
But baseball isn't necessarily played in black and white. Do you think that it's kind of been – one of those things where there are unintended consequences to having so much information that's why a spectator is kind of suffering right now watching the game?
Well, I liken it to the refrigerator, right? Before, you know, you have a refrigerator. That thing didn't work after a year. Then next thing you know, they started fixing them. It's, you got 15-year warranty. Oh, man, that's awesome. I'm going to buy that one. Then people quit buying refrigerators because they had them for 15 years.
Right.
They stopped doing that.
So the same thing's happened with sabermetrics. Yeah, we got smarter. You got more advanced. You were able to really get to the answer of a lot of things. Pretty soon it was like, we can't get a hit no more.
Right.
Defense is so good. The pitchers, hey, this guy can't hit a ball inside. Make him pull it. You know, and so now it's almost like your knowledge has hurt the game.
Right.
And you got to adjust it. So – I get the numbers. They show up. They work. They make sense. But you also have to recognize with that it's kind of killing the game as well.
Right.
That's how I can sit and listen to Harold Reynolds like almost every night, all night, because he comes up with refrigerator references. That
makes sense. It work, right.
That makes sense. Harold, thanks so much for the time, especially this busy week. Very nice of you to join us here in San Diego or in Vegas. Back home to San Diego. Thanks a lot. Great stuff.
Thanks, Harold.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Harold Reynolds right there.
Gwen and Chris wanted to rank things, and that means whatever they want.
Come on, don't get weird.
They bring you their top five of the day because it's time to start the countdown.
Yesterday, our countdown focused on our favorite five spots in Las Vegas.
and we came up with the same one. It was crazy. I mean, there's 8,000 places.
I actually had to change my number one.
You actually changed your number one so that we wouldn't have the same number one. But we both agreed to Caesar's Palace Sportsbook was like the number one thing. That was the very first thing that drew me to Las Vegas back in the day. So that's why I put it number one. Today, favorite five buffet items.
Yes, indeed.
Las Vegas, of course, is known for the buffet. And I personally don't know about you, Tony, but I can't walk past one without going in.
You're a buffet guy.
I am such a buffet guy. It's one of my favorite words in the entire English language.
Buffet.
Just buffet. Yeah, just give me that. But what are your five favorite things that you can eat as much as you want of in a buffet? I'm going to let you go first today.
I'm going to start. Dang, I did one of your moves.
You did one of my moves.
I'm going to start with a dessert.
The whole dessert?
No, not a whole. The buffet is nice because it's usually a plethora of different desserts you can choose from. Mm-hmm. My favorite is a nice cold slice of apple pie with a little bit of ice cream.
Oh, and I can't imagine it's a little bit of ice cream.
It's probably a lot of bit of ice cream.
Yeah.
Correct me. Sorry.
Right.
And, you know, the beauty about the buffet is that you just keep going back and back and back and continue to eat.
If the first one doesn't taste right, you can try another one. Sure. All right. My number five is the sides area. There's something about macaroni and cheese when you can scoop it out of that thing and dump as much as you want on your plate.
Cheese is melting.
Yeah. And mac and cheese or mashed potatoes. Those are good items no matter where you get them.
Yeah.
But for some reason at a buffet, they taste a little bit better. I don't know if it, maybe the heat lamp helps them. I don't know. But I love digging out a little mac and cheese on the side place. So that's my number five.
See, the problem with buffets, especially between you and I, is that this is going to be similar. So I'm going to have to change what would have been my number four because you mentioned it already.
Oh, okay.
In mac and cheese.
Oh, mac and cheese.
I'm going to change it.
Number four.
At most of the time, wait a minute. Oh, I am first, huh?
So yeah, you're first today.
Gosh. All right, I'm gonna get these next three right. I promise. All right. At most buffets, you can find some type of prime rib being sliced up somewhere. Mm. Another one of my favorites is they got the au jus sauce to go with it. Or if you're a horseradish guy like myself,
I'm not.
You go that way.
Okay.
You don't like the spice?
I don't like the spice. What happened to you yesterday?
Oh.
I don't like the spice. I'm not going to explain any further.
See Dumb and Dumber for that one.
No.
Stay away from the crushed red peppers.
Number four for me, this is going to be a strange answer, but it's actually true. It's the salad bar.
That
I know you don't go to a buffet for the salad bar, but here's in my wild, wacky way of thinking. I usually open up every trip to a buffet for dinner by heaping a plate
full of
salad bar and tricking myself into the fact that I'm going to go ahead and eat a little healthier tonight at the buffet. So I do the buffet salad bar, which by the time you're done heaping all the stuff that's on there on your plate, you've just had a meal and a half.
Yeah.
But I do like the salad bars in most buffets, I got to admit. So number four.
Number three.
Told you I'd get it right
this time,
ladies and gentlemen.
You did.
Number three on my list. Occasionally, a buffet won't have it, but most of them do. The fresh pasta area, where they can actually put the pasta in the bowl.
Whip up a little fresh pasta.
Whip it up the fresh pasta. Listen, I don't know if there's a better meal out there than fresh pasta with the fresh Parmesan cheese on top. You can kind of make it how you want. It's one of my favorite things at a buffet.
And then you walk down about 5 yards and you heap about six scoops of macaroni and cheese on the side.
And then
on your way back, you stop at the salad bar. You know, because it makes perfect sense.
I usually walk past that part.
Right. My number three is a breakfast item. The lox and bagels section.
Ooh.
You know? Okay. If you go to the store, the market, that lox is a little expensive. I love going to a buffet when they've got about 18 pounds of that lox just sitting out there, and I get a couple of bagels and some cream cheese, and then I just heap the lox on there, and I just think that's a delicious breakfast treat. Buffet is the best place to get lox and bagels.
Number two.
Number two for me, these last two for me will be breakfast items.
Okay.
But we're going to start with the bread portion.
All right.
I'm not a big fan of taking my French toast out of the French toast basket that's been there. I want mine prepared fresh.
Oh, yes.
And at a buffet, they are more than happy to make you a couple fresh slices
they are?
Of French toast. Yeah, you gotta.
That's off the menu. I didn't know that.
It is off the menu, but if you're nice, you know, maybe throw a couple dollars behind it. You might be.
They might make you some fresh French toast.
They will make you some fresh French toast.
Oh my goodness! That's crucial knowledge that I did not have. I've always eaten the French toast that's been sitting there for a while.
You and I are both go with the flow guys.
Yeah.
My wife isn't. She's not a go with the flow type of gal. So okay. I've learned from her that sometimes
that's
it's as simple
one.
As just asking. Things can happen for
fair
you.
Fair enough. All right. Good, good. I'm really happy with that one because I'm going to put that to use tomorrow morning. Number two for me is similar akin to your earlier one, but just the frozen yogurt station. It kind of has to do with the desserts, but I like to have my own self-serve frozen yogurt with all the possible toppings. And you know when you go to the yogurt store and the lady behind the counter says, which toppings do you want?
Yes.
You're a little embarrassed to ask for 18 different toppings.
Not
but
me.
At the buffet, you can put all 18 of them on there if you want to, and so that's why it's number two. Love it.
Number one, I feel like you'd be number one on everybody's list.
Yeah.
If you go to a buffet and you don't hit up the omelet bar,
yeah,
like, what are you really doing? I mean, the omelet bar is where it's at.
What are you really doing?
I mean, you're not there to really enjoy a buffet if you don't hit up the omelet bar. The best thing about the omelet bar is you can go egg whites, you can go regular eggs, and still get everything you want as far as toppings.
I know.
Only at a buffet, though.
Only at a buffet. I love the omelet bar, but not as much as I love beef ribs. And I love them when they are sitting there piled about 20 feet high, and I put about that many on my plate.
Beef ribs.
Oh, yes. Got to be the beef ribs. You know, little pork ribs are all right. The spare ribs are okay.
But you like the big ribs.
I don't dislike those. But give me a hunk of about 12 beef ribs,
ooh,
and I just go crazy. Ooh. That's my number one thing at a buffet.
A buffet that's got
beef ribs.
I feel real heavy.
I go
right
nuts.
Now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You can't walk for a week, but it's fantastic. I love it. Well, Baseball Winter Meetings 2018, we continue. Gwynn and Chris, Crisello, Tony Gwynn Jr. from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Hotel, and it is AJ Cassavell from MLB.com, covers the San Diego Padres, covers them as well as they can be covered.
Yes, AJ, good, happy haircut, man.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
We didn't recognize him when he came over.
It was like
over,
almost
huh?
to your shoulders. Now you're rocking a shortcut now.
Yeah, it was as long as it's been, but I actually got a haircut like 3 months ago, and this is probably my second or third one, but you haven't seen me
seen
in that time. Yeah.
That time.
You got to post it on Instagram or something for Tony to keep up with
you. I'm not
now.
A selfie guy. I cover the team. I don't like putting
myself. You don't seem
up,
like
yeah.
a selfie
good
guy.
Good for you. Well, the winter meetings have not exactly been a plethora of trades. In fact,
or
I don't
any.
Think there's been any. Yeah. But I don't know. Where do you think the Padres stand? Where are they going? What are they thinking?
Well, I would like to see a trade happen, but
yeah.
I think right now it seems pretty cold on that front. I know they've checked in on just about everyone, and they've been rumored with some of the big names. I don't think anything is remotely close with any of those big names. I also think that one of maybe the bigger storylines to me that's come out of the winter meetings is AJ Preller's kind of insistence that he doesn't feel like he needs to add a starting pitcher, that he might stand pat with his rotation. I'm inclined not to believe that necessarily at face value. I think he wants to acquire a starting pitcher however he can, whether it's free agency or a trade. But at the same time, it's a long offseason, and there's a reason to kind of maybe play chicken with some teams that you're trying to trade with and say, hey, you know what? We don't need a pitcher. We can go into the season with these guys, and at that point, why not? Why? If they don't want to give up any of their big time prospects, they don't have to. They're not necessarily looking to compete right off the bat in 2019. They would like to have that frontline starting pitcher, but I don't know if the Padres feel like they need to trade from their farm system depth to acquire it.
So why don't you believe them then, AJ? When you say he's not inclined to, you're like, I don't necessarily believe that.
Well, I mean, he's kind of leaned toward in the last couple of days saying, hey, we're gonna stand pat in the rotation if nothing's really out there. Well, I believe him there. I'm sure there's nothing out there that lines up with the Padres, but things change during the offseason, and I don't think they're sitting back and resting on their laurels that these are the guys we have in the rotation and we're sticking with that, because the rotation, quite frankly, needs to get better than it was. It wasn't good enough last year, and it's not good enough going into next season. So I would be surprised if these guys in the rotation are the same guys, and that's it, with no additions at the start of next year.
I'm agreeing with AJ. I want to be on record.
Which AJ?
You. Okay. Both AJs. Well, no, you, because you're disagreeing with the other AJ. Good point. AJ Cassavell is with us from MLB.com. One of the things that's kind of come to my attention since I've been in Las Vegas that has kind of changed my thinking a little bit is the potential future of Will Myers. I don't know if you're hearing anything or if you've heard a little of the same buzz that I'm hearing, but I thought for sure, really, the Padres would wind up parting with Will Myers this offseason. I just thought, hey, look, the third base thing didn't work. It makes sense. They've got the corner outfield covered. Will Myers could bring them back something in return. But now that these winter meetings have gone on, it seems to me that maybe there's not going to be the market they want for a Will Myers. Maybe it won't work out. What do you think?
I think it's still a possibility. It's clearly still something that they're exploring, and I'm sure if other teams called, they would listen and vice versa.
Right.
But I'm kind of with you on that. I think that They maybe feel like Will Myers would be, like, trading him right now would be selling low on a talented guy because of the season he's coming off of with all the injuries he had and the underperforming. And so they have these six kind of major league caliber outfielders, and at the beginning of the offseason it looked like, yeah, clearly they're going to trade one of those. There's no room for six guys on a big league roster. But again, we talked about this with the starting pitching. If you're not getting enough back for him, they're not in desperation mode to trade one of the outfielders. They don't have to. And so if they're getting offered less than they think Will Myers is worth, they don't have to trade Will Myers. They don't need to add to the rotation. I think they should. They don't need to trade one of their outfielders. I think maybe they should. They do need a third baseman. That's kind of wide open right now.
So if you have six outfielders, how is it that you don't need to trade an outfielder? I look at this roster, and granted, I think...
Spoken from an outfielder.
it's rare now to almost see five outfielders on certain rosters, depending on the roster construction. But is the holdup the money that Will Myers has, or is the holdup the fact that they want to make sure they get the right value for what they're giving up for in Will Myers?
Yeah, well, the money's a part of the value, I think. So I think it comes down to more they want to make sure that they're getting enough value, and part of the value is they don't want to eat any of that money. If they're going to find a deal, it's got to be for someone who with a team the Mariners rumor.
The
Mariners rumor from earlier.
Contract.
Yeah, that can kind of make that work, and maybe the Padres get some positional balance on their roster, because six outfielders, no third baseman, that's not a way to go into a season.
Right.
So, but
I don't know, the way they play the shift these days, there's teams that don't use third baseman.
Yeah. Well, six outfielders, I think they could theoretically do it, and all of a sudden you've got a pretty fierce spring training competition on your hands, and one of those guys is starting the year in AAA, and I'd have to go and look at specifically at who has options, but I think all six of those guys are major league players, and it's not the end of the world if you're asking for competition, but you need the rest of the roster to be filled out.
It isn't the end of the world, but it does hold up the development of guys like Hunter Renfroe and Franmil Reyes and Manny Margot, because those are guys who, when you watch the end of the 2018 season, with probably more Franmil Reyes and Hunter Renfroe, you got excited watching the way they finished that second half of the season. So it would seem as though the move isn't just to go from six to five outfielders. It's probably more so those guys can get sufficient playing time, I would assume.
Yeah, and that's why I think they're going to end up, before the offseason's over, trading one of the outfielders.
They have to, I would think.
Yeah. Six outfielders is in the way the outfield's set up right now. And they talk about depth. They talk about not wanting someone to get hurt and then all of a sudden be scrambling. But if they traded one of the – say they trade Myers, they still have outfield depth.
Right.
They still have Franchi Cordero.
Right.
So if you're trading Will Myers and getting a third baseman, it's not like you're really jeopardizing the outfield. I will say, I mean, Will Myers is more proven than any of these outfielders that
have
right now.
That's true.
But you still have competition for playing time, because Franchi Cordero can play all three outfield spots, and I think they really want to see playing time from him, and so he's right there in the mix, and he could play center field if Manny Margot struggles, if Renfroe or Reyes regresses, or if, God forbid, there's an injury, he's an option there too. So
yeah. Travis Jankowski is another guy.
Yeah, that's right. I think he's a perfect kind of bench outfield
perfect
piece.
Perfect guy.
Perfect, but you know, needs a little playing time to stay into it. AJ Cassavell is with us from MLB.com talking all these Padre situations and maybe good problems to have. You know, we heard the JT Realmuto name come up, Miami Marlins all-star catcher. I the first thing Tony and I thought was, really? Catcher? That just seems like kind of the last place the Padres would be attacking. Does that speak to the fact that the Padres just have so much in their farm system right now that every name that comes up, the Padres are being linked to that team?
I think more than anything else, yeah. And it's not just that he's a catcher and the Padres already have two pretty good young catchers. It's that he has two more years of team control, and in theory, 2019 isn't the Padres' year. Right. So he's got 1 year of being a real impact guy in San Diego. That said, I think the Padres would be foolish not to look into him because he's probably the best catcher in baseball right now, if not one of them. Yeah, he's 1B. So he's I think when you see that the Padres have checked on Realmuto, well, they'd be foolish not. It's literally their job to find out what the cost is and if they can acquire a good kind of talented players. So
AJ, we're getting to the point of the year where we start thinking about spring training, you know, and it's come a little faster than I really wanted it to be honest. A
couple months away.
But last year, we heard so much about Tatis. We heard so much about Urias. We seen some of the pitching come up. Who is the wave, not counting Tatis, because I think we all assume that we are going to see Tatis and Urias at some point in the 2019 season. Mm-hmm. Other than those two, who is the next wave that's coming?
Well, there's a good story about those two on MLB.com today.
I know. Yeah, I saw it written by a guy named AJ Cassavall.
Oh, okay. Good. All right.
But if we're going past those two, I think the pitching this year could be interesting. It's because if they don't add to the rotation, or maybe if they only add one guy, it's wide open, and there's going to be prospects pushing for time in the rotation. There's going to be, I think, Logan Allen, Cal Quantrill, Chris Paddock could all see time in the big leagues.
That gave me goosebumps.
And that's to me, I think a lot of people like saw what Lauer and Lucchese did last season, and that's all well and good. They came up in April, and then were there the whole year. I don't know if we're going to get that out of these guys, especially Quantrill and Paddock, because they had Tommy John surgery relatively recently.
So they'll be on innings.
But they'll be on innings limits, but they'll still get their shot in the major league level because they've performed in this scenario. They will have performed well in the minor leagues to earn that spot, and so I think those are kind of impact guys that the Padres are counting on getting their first taste of the major leagues this year, and then maybe you go into 2020 and they have some experience under their belt. All of a sudden, Garrett Richards is back, Denelson Lamet's back, and now you have the makings of a decent rotation if you can add a top line arm to it next year.
Bullpen, what's the say? I mean, the bullpen's always strong, but where do they start, or are they going to stay pat in the bullpen most likely?
Yeah, I think they'll stay pat trade wise. But for me, the interesting kind of the X factor maybe on the whole pitching staff is Matt Strom. I thought he was really good last year.
Right,
he was babied a little bit last year.
Andy Green just walked up as he said that, by the way, everybody.
he's put on some weight this offseason. He's bulked up, and he's got the kind of stuff where he could be a frontline rotation kind of guy, even if he's not eating 7-8 innings at a time. And so, best case scenario, Matt Strom's that guy. If that doesn't pan out, if his body doesn't hold up physically because he was coming off knee surgery, if his body doesn't hold up physically, then he's got a spot in the bullpen, and his stuff's nasty, and it'll clearly play somewhere. The question is where.
AJ Cassavell, great stuff. Strange bedfellows is what you would call it here at the baseball winter meetings. You're doing an interview with one guy, and other people walk by. That's what it's all about in Las Vegas.
Yeah, I don't think Andy liked my babied Matt Strom comment.
No,
very
I'm
much.
Pretty sure.
No,
he
loved it.
AJ Cassavell, thank you for coming on, brother.
Thanks for coming on, man.
Thanks, guys.